Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
And so I started to see that the culture work absolutely has just as much importance as being, you know, systematic and rigorous about studying culture and changing culture is how do we talk about those pieces that are related to inspiring people to want to be part of it.
Welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, a podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders. Hey, today we're talking about how to build a culture that unites, inspires, and achieves those breakthrough results that you're certainly after as a leader. Specifically, we're going to get into how do you build a culture that unites organization and individual needs, that inspires and unites your entire team or workforce in the service of the common goals of the organization, and ultimately a culture that attracts the team members, customers, and partners that you most need and want. And here to help us do all of that is, I think it's fair to say, culture expert Laura Hamill. And Laura is an organizational psychologist, former director of people research at Microsoft, owner of the Paris Phoenix Group, and author of a book from The Economist called The Power of Culture, Bringing Values to Life at Work. Laura Hamill, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Oh, awesome. Thanks so much for having me, David.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I am so glad you're here. So, Laura, before we dive into culture, I want you to take us back, if you could, to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader, however you might define that and however far back you want to go.
Wow. That's a good one. That's a great question, David. So, earliest, and you're happy with going like in elementary school?
Hey, I answer this question at age 11. So, and I've had people,
okay, good.
I think the earliest answer, Laura, I think I've ever had was someone who went back to like age 6 or 7. So very, very early, but others into their 20s. So it's all about you.
Okay.
Laura, take us where
That's
you will.
Good. I will go to, this was, I think, 6th grade. And I was one of 2 girls on a boys' baseball team. And there was no softball team when I was where I grew up. And I loved playing baseball and softball. And so I was really nervous about being part of this team, but it ended up that I was voted captain. And I thought that that was a really unusual thing to have happen, given, you know, and this was the rural South. This was not, you know, a very progressive place. But it was really interesting how that went down. I just talked to people. I was excited to be there. And people knew that I loved what I was doing. I loved the sport of it. I played second base. and I was just thrilled that I got to play. And so, and I don't remember all the details because it's been a long, long time ago, but I was really proud of like, hey, I'm captain here. And the people that I'm with on this team, on the surface, you would have thought might have rejected me, but they're actually accepting me and want me to be like, or they're saying through their votes of me being captain that they want me to be here. So I think that's the earliest one.
That's a pretty cool
funny.
One.
I've never thought of that before, David. Thanks. That's a good question.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad we were able to go there. I'm curious, as you think back, like, why do you think they chose you? What were the character elements or your experience or what was it that you think did that.
I think the big part about like how excited I was about what we were doing and being part of the team was part of it. Like just sort of feeling like I'm lucky, I'm glad I'm here. I think I was pretty positive. I've sort of had that. I've always had that as part of my character of like pretty positive, optimistic person. There might have been some novelty to it too, you know, if I'm completely honest, like there not being a lot of girls and it's sixth grade after all.
I
But
love that's our rebellion. We're gonna make a girl captain.
yeah, exactly.
Love it.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was that deep, but I think that there was something that was kind of interesting about it, and also that I just loved what we were doing.
Yeah, that passion had to come through. Well, that's
Yeah.
fantastic. Thank you for sharing that with us. All right, well, let's dive into culture here. And you talk about this in your book, and it's certainly, and I hear this from listeners all the time. One of our favorite definitions of culture when we talk about it is Seth Godin. He just says culture is people like us do things like this. So that's a
Yeah.
like a super kind of easy,
Easy.
practical way of thinking about it. You get a lot more in depth, obviously. But when you're talking about culture, one of the things that you call out is that it is squishy and it is hard for us to wrap our heads around and so forth. What do you mean by culture? And what is it that we're
Yeah.
talking about today?
Yeah. So I really like the Edgar Schein version, though it is a little academic in nature, but it's the underlying values and norms and beliefs of the organization. And I like to use an iceberg. You know, it's not the stuff at the top that you can see. It's the stuff that you got to go deeper on, that you have to ask lots of questions, you have to uncover. It's a lot about kind of what's pushing us to do the things that the way we do them. And it's the stuff that is, you know, sometimes uncomfortable to understand. And it's really hard a lot of times to understand, because when we're seeking to understand culture, a lot of times we're already part of the culture. And this is why, I mean, I loved writing this book because I'm fascinated by this topic. There's so much about just the very nature and characteristics of culture that make it hard. And this one that I'm describing around once you become part of it, you can't even see it, I think is what makes this almost circular or challenging for people in organizations to try to change it. Because you've probably heard the idea of thinking about the goldfish and swimming in the water. It's like, does a goldfish even know it's swimming in water? Which I think is hilarious when we do all these animal analogies that we can never really verify, right? But the water that we swim in is, you could think of that as culture, and you don't might maybe even realize that you're swimming in water. And so that's what I think, one of the reasons why the culture work can be so hard is that we can't see it anymore. We're such a part of it. It's so natural. It's just what we do. And so it's hard to be aware of it. It's hard to change it.
Yeah. One of the, as you're sharing that about that, it's that invisit, the air we breathe, the water we swim in, the what have you, there's that saying that you're not in traffic. You are traffic. We are all part of the thing that, and I served on a traffic management organization, one time, and it was fascinating to me how so many of the, and I would say the majority of the people there were trying to figure out how to get cars off the road so that they could drive that road more quickly. And it's like, that's not going to work. We are all traffic. We are all culture. So I think there's a parallel there in what
Yes.
you're
Oh,
saying.
that's such a good one. I love that one, David. That's a perfect one. We are traffic, right?
So when you're talking about, and you already hinted at this, the idea that culture drives behavior, it's that kind of invisible force that has us doing the things that we do, and whether that's individually, organizationally. So that's part of the importance. But culture plays such a huge role in every team and every organization. And then there's the fact that, and one of the things I love that you just come right out the very beginning is, listen, you have a culture. It drives me nuts when I hear leaders say, oh, I don't know how to build culture. We can't have a culture if we're remote or hybrid or what have you, or in XYZ circumstances. Like, no, you have
Right.
a culture right now, you do.
Exactly.
So let's get into this. Why is it so important? What does it mean that we
Yeah.
have one, whether we're thinking about it or
Yeah.
not?
Completely. So the idea here is that there's this set of kind of ways we do things that are in place. Usually, I mean, even when two people get together and start working together, there starts to be this kind of way we're doing things. And as you add more people, that starts to become more solidified. And so when a new person joins, they are smart, learning, adapting organisms, and they look around and they see, oh, I see you do it this way. I see you do it that way. They especially look to people who have made it in this particular group, mm-hmm. people with more power typically, and look to those people with special importance of, oh, well, you have figured this out kind of in the ultimate way, right? You've made it to the top of this organization. So I'm going to take what you do and what you say with even more with more emphasis. And so we're looking around to the people around us in the organization, and we start to do the things that they do. We're just a way of adapting and learning. In some ways it can sound really negative, like you're just a victim of the culture, but it's not. It's actually really cool because we learn, right? And we're smart and we see things. And sometimes we don't even realize that we're being influenced by them. But we start to see, oh, you do it this way, not that way. And all day long, employees at all levels really are making decisions, right? They're making sometimes little decisions, sometimes big decisions, but all day long, they're making decisions and kind of learning and adapting and starting to do things. Most people start to do things that are aligned with what the culture kind of pushes them to do. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, it's not bad. It's not that we're just, you know, robots. It's just that there's a lot of inertia in the organization to say, this is how it will be most successful. This is how it will be most well received. Do it this way. And we really start shaping everything that we do to fit that. And maybe I can just give you like a little example of one of the things that I learned in one of my first jobs was a tech company, a large tech company that I was working in. And I was writing my first memo, and that was in the olden days. And I'm sure, David, you would never remember this, but when we wrote memorandum all caps on the top.
Oh, yes.
Why did we have to do that? I don't know why we felt the need to declare memorandum, but we did. So we had these memos, and I wrote my first one, and I thought, I hope this is good. Like, I hope this is something that would be, you know, the people would think, oh, that's a good memo. And my manager wasn't around. So I thought, let me ask this person who sits next to me. She is on my team. So in theory, that would make sense, right? We were all in offices. We all kept our doors closed. And we, you know, just did our own thing with our computers. But I went next door, knocked on her door, and asked her if she'd read my memo. And she looked at me kind of funny and said, okay, and sort of just kept typing. And so I left it there, walked back to my office and thought, oh man, I have no idea if she's really going to do this, but let me give her time. I'll come back tomorrow. Went back the next day, knocked on her door. She's in the same place doing the same thing. And I said, did you have a chance to read my memo? And she said, she kind of pushed it towards me and said, it's fine. So I took it back to my office and I looked at it thinking, you know, she's going to give me some feedback or something, or maybe just a smiley face on the top, right? Nothing, right? I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. Not even a little pencil mark or anything. And so what do you think I learned from that? I learned really quickly, oh, I wasn't really supposed to do that. That's not what we do here. We don't ask each other for help. And so I kept getting messages over and over again from around me that we don't do that. In fact, my manager told me at one of my first kind of check-ins, you need to stop helping people so much. And I would really like you to toot your own horn a little bit more, right? Tell people how the things that you've been achieving, tell people what you're doing. So my point is I started to do that. I started to learn that, even though my nature might've been to me a little bit more collaborative over time, I'm sure I became just like the woman that sat next to me. Right? I just fit into that.
That culture. Was the culture.
That was the culture. Now, the problem, and this is part of what you're kind of asking, the problem with that is that at that time, we were working on the development of collaboration software. So, right? So that's a problem when there's a disconnect between how people are in the day-to-day work, how they treat each other, and what you're trying to achieve. It's going to be quite hard for us to do a good job with collaboration software if nobody in the organization even understands how to collaborate. And so those are the kinds of things I see in my work is that big disconnect between the culture and what you're trying to achieve from a strategic perspective.
The inertia, it was the word that you used, and I love that as a concept. It made me think about we were scuba diving one time, and I had never done like a real drift dive before, where you just let the current carry you. There's always some current, but and so he explained everything to us, and we dropped down, and there's this big rock formation, and we're down around the bottom of on the sandy floor of the ocean, and get ready to go around this rock formation. And then I learned what an actual current is about, because we go around this, get out from behind this rock formation, and whoosh, I mean, it is just, you can go up, you can go down, you can go sideways, but you are
But you
not
can't
going
go
against
against.
that current. And I think of culture that way, that inertia that is carrying us along. And like you say, it can carry us to good places, or it can carry us to not so good places. So it's not that the fact that that exists is good or bad. I think that's important that you've emphasized that. So, well, I'm going to dive in, because I don't want to take all of our time just talking about how important it is, because we both are aficionados, right? You get into how and the intentionality of building culture and how you do it. So we can create that inertia, we can create that momentum, and we can create it in a way that takes us where we want to go, to the results we want, all the things we talked about up front at the beginning of the show, and an attractive force, and the breakthrough results, all the rest. So before we get into all of the how, I want to ask you a question that I know bedevils people. And that is, what makes culture go wrong? Because with a few exceptions, I mean, there are a couple of psychopaths out there, but with a few exceptions, I've never met a team leader, an organization leader, a department head who wakes up in the morning and says, "You know what I want to do? I want to build a crappy culture." Like, no one wakes up and says that. Well, I mean, almost no one, 99.9% of people. And yet, there are so many people frustrated out there by poor workplace cultures. So, as we're going to get into the how, and you've got a really good model for us to follow, what is it that makes it go wrong?
A lot of different ways it can go wrong. I'd say one of them is, and this is what I see happen quite a bit, is that the leaders in the organization kind of put culture in a box to the side. They don't understand that it's really a key part of their job. They think about it as maybe a quarterly initiative or something that's HR's responsibility, and they don't understand how critical culture is to what they're trying to achieve with the business results, that those are, they go hand in hand. They're not separate. And so disconnecting culture from the business is one of the biggest things that I see happening. And so then it sort of feels like it's superficial or it's just sort of this cute, nice thing. And that's really unfortunate, I think, is when organizations sort of see it as it's this nice icing that we can have. When everything's going well, we can have a focus on culture. But when things are hard, we don't have the time for that. That's extra. And so that is seeing it kind of as a program or HR's responsibility or something that's not core to the business is, I think, one of the things that can happen and when people then kind of disconnect from it. And so it doesn't get the time and the attention and the connection with business strategy that it really requires. Having the leaders of the organization really authentically believe in the culture they're trying to create is so important because employees can see right through it if the leaders sort of see it as something cute and extra and icing. And so when that happens sometimes, then there are some leaders who might not demonstrate the culture, right? They might be people who kind of work against the culture. you sort of have this in lots of companies where most of the leaders are on board, but then there's that one.
There's that one. Yep.
There's that one leader who just does stuff all the time that goes against the culture. And because that person gets results, we never do anything about that person. And then it just sort of emphasizes for employees that this isn't real, right? This culture that you say you're trying to create, this isn't real. So it just becomes something that becomes, again, superficial. So that lack of having leaders feel that sense of responsibility and accountability for culture, to me, is the main big thing I see happen, where then it kind of can go south from there.
Yeah. If I were to summarize all of that in one word, I would say neglect. It's almost like that failure to pay attention to it, to reinforce it. One of the elements of your circle jumping ahead is accountability. And I think that's one of those places that we so often overlook as leaders when we're thinking about culture. Okay, so I'm jumping ahead, so I better not do that. We better get to the model here. So you call this the intentional culture circle, and there are kind of two halves to this circle. One is setting the stage, and then the other is bringing the culture to life. So walk us, 50,000 foot level, through these steps, or that might not be the right word, pillars, whatever you call them.
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll dive into a little bit more depth in a couple of them.
Yeah, for sure. Just one thing before I jump into that, I just wanted to explain why I wanted to develop this particular model that you're talking about. So I have had the chance in my career, I've been a researcher for a lot of my career. I do kind of research on topics related to employee engagement, well-being, culture. So I've studied it from more of an academic perspective. But then I became a chief people officer. And that was a shock to my system, because the practicality of what actually happens in an HR organization was pretty mind-blowing to me. I used to finger wag to chief people officers and CHROs about, come on, be more strategic. And then when you're in that job, it's like, oh, I get it. So what I was trying to do with this model is to say, okay, what does science tell us? How could I translate this in a way that feels digestible, that feels like it's not overwhelming, and you can kind of pick it up anywhere along the way, meaning it's a circle, it never ends, you have to keep working on it. And companies are usually at all these different places in kind of the journey of working on their culture. And so I wanted to kind of acknowledge that. So the idea with this intentional culture circle, just kind of high level, each one of the pieces of the circles, I could go on and on about, but I won't. But let me just start from the beginning of, it's really important to create a vision of what you want the culture to be. And that's a step that a lot of companies skip. They kind of go right to, okay, here are our values. And they don't really get clear about what they want it to look like. They don't get clear about why. Why do we need this kind of culture? And what are the stories that we should tell about what we can be, what this could be to inspire people? So that inspirational piece gets skipped a lot too. So creating the vision of the culture and really connecting it to what your company's trying to achieve in the kind of longer term is a really important step. Then there's pieces that are related to, how do we behavioralize this? How do we make it so that people can see themselves in it? A lot of times I see companies that have values, and the values themselves might be fine, but they only kind of keep it at a label level, or like one little phrase that comes after. And it, usually people will say, I get it, I like it, but I don't know exactly what that means for me. And so behavioralizing is just a way to say, in very simple terms, this is what it looks like in action, right? This is what it looks like when you do these things. So that's another big part of it. And then there's the piece around education. How do we actually spend the time on discussing the culture we're trying to create and making sure that new employees have the space for it, but also the people who are already here, that they understand the culture at a deeper level. And then there are some different phases around the accountability piece. And there are ways to measure whether the culture is actually being demonstrated, whether or not people feel like they can see it in a consistent manner from managers and their peers and leaders. And that's a really interesting thing just to measure that. I find that there can be a lot of variability. In some companies I work with, the leaders are doing it. You know, the leaders are like, oh yeah, let's do this. But the managers, just maybe we haven't spent enough time with them helping them understand it. So that can happen. Yeah. But
all the time. It's so
right.
Common. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And so then the accountability too around how do we just set the expectation that, hey, leaders, let's talk about what I need from you around the culture work, what that looks like, what I expect. It's, again, the steps that just get, you know, nobody does those things. It's sort of assumed that people will do these things. We don't have these intentional conversations. So those are some of the kind of basic steps that you set the stage. But then there's the pieces around how do you go deeper in the organization and get people, I call them culture champions, but it's just the idea of we for sure want leaders to be talking about culture, but we don't just want leaders to be talking about culture. We like there to be, you know, lots of people who really connect with the culture that you're trying to create. So how can you get people involved at a deeper level for sure around this? There's the pieces around experiences, and that's kind of a big like title saying experiences, but it's how do we come together and actually like feel the culture together? Like a lot of times you can think about company meetings or all hands or big times when we bring everybody from different locations together. Maybe there's a session that is going deep on one of your values. Maybe there are some awards that are given around one of your values that are that all the employees vote on, right? There's a lot of different ways you can experience it. What I had seen before I created this model, what I had seen is a lot of companies were going right to these experiences, trying to create these times where people would get together and talk about the culture, but they had never done all the steps beforehand, right? They never actually defined things or behavioralized things or educated people on them. And it just felt kind of out of the blue. Oh, you mean, so once a year we get together and people get awards? Like, what does that have to do with anything?
Completely
you've never set out the stage.
Any context, yeah.
No context. And then the last kind of pieces of this are probably the hardest pieces. It's how do you actually start embedding the values into the practices, the structures, the processes in the organization. And it's easy to think about the people system, right? How do we hire people that are aligned with the values? How do we onboard them? How do we think about performance management relative to the values? But what I also think is really important is how do we think about strategic planning? How do we think about what we fund, you know, in the next upcoming year and how that aligns with the values? How do we think about how we serve our customers, how we innovate? All those things really should be aligned with the values. And if they're not, your employees will see that, right? They'll see that like, oh yeah, you have this really cool thing that you shared with us, but look at all the things that we do in practice that really go against our culture. So that's the so hopefully short enough version of the intentional culture circle. Again, the idea that it doesn't end and you know, the rewards and recognition piece of those systems is that's a really big part of it. Like what do we reward? What do we recognize? That's super important as well.
All right. So
that was
those,
the fast version.
those elements of the circle. So vision. So we've got the picture of what it is we're after. And while you said it's a circle and we can kind of enter anywhere, that one sounds like it's pretty dang important.
Pretty,
to start
yes,
it. We have
completely.
To know what we're aiming at. But from there, the behaviors, what does it behaviorally look like, smell like, act like, all sound like to create that? The education piece, how we're bringing people into it, the accountability piece, how we're practicing yeah. follow through for what we're building,
yep.
the champions piece, where we're getting more and more people engaged, communication, and then experiences. Yeah. So the things that a lot of people classically think, oh, this is a cultural moment, but it's in the context of all the rest of it. And then the systems, where how are all of our systems actually supporting or hindering the culture we're trying to build?
That's right.
So two things that strike me and speaking on behalf of our listeners. First, and why I wanted to feature you and feature the book is because just as you said, so many times when we're trying to build culture, we omit some of those steps. And, oh, we've got a picture of it. And then we're holding people accountable. And it's like, whoa, wait, we got to, you know, what are the behaviors? How do we teach it? How do we bring people into it? How do we reward? All that kind of thing. All right. Or like you said, we go straight to the get together and, hey, this is our culture. And wait, what are we talking about? Right. So we need all of those elements. And yet, if I'm thinking of myself as, okay, well, I'm leading a team of, you know, 5 or 10 people, or maybe a department, and I've got 30 people, like, whether you're the CEO or a team leader, you have a culture for your team, or the people you're a part of and the people you're responsible for. Where do we start after vision? I know that you said we can pick it up anywhere, but if we're getting practical now, and I'm like, I'm listening to you and I'm going, Laura, I love it. I want culture. I want everything you're talking about. And I have a picture of what that looks like. Where do you recommend that leader goes next?
I think especially if you're a leader within an organization that already has values, I wouldn't recommend going to create new ones, right? That doesn't make a lot of sense. Instead, what could you do with your team to bring them together and talk about the values that the company has put forward? A lot of times these values are beautiful, important, really like thoughtful words that we should be that we all should be embodying. So a lot of the work is just, it hasn't been actually applied, right? The experience of the culture is not consistent. So a department leader could take that and have conversations with their team, right? And talk to them about, well, how do you experience the culture? If you look at these values, are there some of these that you feel like, yeah, we live those, that one, but oh, this one over here, this one is really, this is not, nobody does this. And I think having those kinds of conversations and asking them about, like, what should we be doing differently on our team? How could we be living these in more consistent ways just within our work and what we're doing? What are there, you know, what are the opportunities for that? Just opening up and having very, you know, open conversations about the culture and what could be better, I think can go a long way. And then you can discover, you know, do people even know these values? So maybe you do a little bit of education. That is always a fascinating piece to me. I do this little exercise, and this might be something that a listener could do, is, and you have to have a good, safe relationship, you know, relationship where people can be open and honest, but you do this exercise that starts with, tell me 5 words that come to mind when you think about our culture. Just write those 5 words down. And don't overthink it, but just, what are 5 words that describe our culture? And then after they do that, say, okay, now I want you to think about our company values. And a lot of times that's when people get like a look of panic on their face. Like, oh no, what are our company values? And they, you know, start looking on their phone or on their key card, you know, to find that list. But other people go, yeah, I know our company values, right? That to me is telling and really important information. But then compare the values to those 5 words and look to see, it's like this really unscientific mini culture assessment to see if there's overlap between those 5 words that you kind of came up with off the top of your head and the values that are, you know, on the website. And you can tell a lot if there's some overlap. Like, that's pretty cool. We're doing all right. Versus in some cases, what I find is that the words are opposing, right? We said we want to be collaborative, but I wrote down competitive. You know, that's a whole different place to be. So you can do some exercises like that with your team and just try to understand what's the situation that we're dealing with in terms of how well the values are really coming to life in this organization. So I think the point is, dig in and ask questions and talk about it and get their ideas.
I love that suggestion. That's such a practical activity. And just emphasizing the order there for our listeners again, you ask the 5 words that describe our culture first, so you're getting just people's authentic response there, then ask about the values, if people can recall, so that you're getting that unfiltered response and then what the values are and we can compare. But what strikes me about that conversation, Laura, is You're not, this is not a gotcha game. This is an honest, I'm curious about how you are experiencing our culture on this team or in this
That's
company
right.
or both. And then just asking and genuinely being caring about that person's perspective and experience, that's culture, that's connection, that's it's
Yeah.
investing in that relationship, and you're going to be able to start building from there. So
That's right.
it's one of those, like, you are culture in that moment as well as learning about it and all those.
Yes, I love that. So
Yeah.
true.
So and that gets to there's a concept that we use around here at Let's Grow Leaders called we call it a cultural oasis. If a listener is listening right now and they're thinking, you know, gosh, Laura, I'm in a my broader organization is a bit of a desert when it comes to culture. It is not human-centered the way that I want to lead. It's cost, it's whatever it is. How can I go about, or can I, is it even possible to build that cultural oasis, that watering hole in the middle of this desert of a larger organization? Is it possible for me to do that if the words that are those values are just words on a wall and really don't have any meaning for the broader
Yeah.
organization?
Yeah, it's really tough. I definitely have people who talk to me about that, right? And also the idea of like, I love what we say we're supposed to be. I love those values. That's in fact maybe why I came here. But when I got here, that's not what I'm experiencing, right? And so I definitely have plenty of people who talk to me about that. I do think it's possible. A lot of times, the teams we work on, there's ways to create that oasis and just getting really clear about how we are with each other. You know, what are the ways that we're treating each other so that we can create in our day-to-day experience something that feels pretty good and like I want to come to work because I have this group of people that we've decided we're going to treat each other well and we have these norms with how we treat each other, how we respect each other, how we back each other up. Definitely, that's a huge possibility. The problem, of course, is that you still are within this broader context. And in some jobs, in some roles, you can kind of be an oasis that's separate from the rest of the company. But in other organizations and other roles, it's kind of hard to do. So you still have the context maybe of a culture that's not so healthy. And so I think for a lot of us, it's an individual kind of decision or kind of set of things you have to think about around, is it worth it? You know, is it worth it for me to stay here? And let's be honest, a lot of us need to stay. We need to stay in those organizations. So it's not always an option to leave. But if it's really affecting you over and over again on a day-to-day basis, I encourage people to try to find something, a different job, because it's not worth it to be kind of tortured and to be in a toxic job. It's obviously lots of reasons for that, but you know, our physical and emotional well-being as the primary reasons. But again, it's not possible for a lot of people. So I would say try to do what you can around getting the people who are around you every day really clear about this is who we are, and what we're trying to do together, and we're doing the best we can with the situation that we've got.
And some of the best case, I know those worst case scenarios are what they are, and we have to make some hard decisions. But in the best case
Yeah.
scenarios, and I've experienced it myself, but I've also seen it happen where people who say, you know what? No, I am going to build a good culture on my team and with the people we interact with, and they actually end up transforming the organization from the inside out. It might be more rare, but it is possible.
It's possible. It's possible completely.
All right. Our guest today is Laura Hamill, and we've been talking about culture in so many different ways. So the name of the book is The Power of Culture. You're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. And Laura, I've got another question for you from a little bit later in the book, but before we go there, where should our listeners go to maybe learn more about you, connect with you, find the book, and take
Yeah.
advantage of the resource that you have built for us here?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can buy my book on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com, all the typical places that you would buy a book. You can buy my book there. You can also look at my website. It's parisphoenixgroup.com. So Paris the city, Phoenix the city, group.com. Everybody always asks, like, why that? It's my kids' middle names. When I started my consulting practice, it was they are the reasons why I decided
Why
to
not?
leave corporate America and start my consulting practice. So yeah, so that's why I called it that. And also I'm on LinkedIn under Laura Hamill, Hamill. I'd love to connect.
Fantastic. And we'll for sure have the link in the show notes. All right. Well, I encourage you to connect with Laura and check out the power of culture here. If you are at all concerned with building the culture, that intentional culture that you want, that inspires, unites, helps you drive the productivity you need, attracts the right customers, employees, partners, and so on. So all of that said, Laura, one of the things that you get to a little bit later in the book, without just reading every page, you talk about hearts and minds, and there's a section where you really explicitly call out, okay, the minds piece, yeah, fine, it's the logic and all of that that we go with. When we're talking about hearts and minds and bringing emotion to work, and you really get pretty explicit here, talking about emotion at work and being able to be human beings at work, and that's a significant shift for many leaders, maybe particularly for some older generation. And I'm not saying excluding myself from that, but well, so let's talk about that a little bit. I'd love for you to walk us through, unpack a little bit about emotion at work and trying to build a culture where we really truly are able to show up with hearts and minds.
So this has been a little bit of a journey for me to get to this place where I feel so strongly about this hearts and minds thing. I have been, I got a PhD, I've been a scientist, I've been very linear for a long time in how I think about my work and how I think about culture too. Like, let's study it, let's break it down to its component parts, let's think about how those things come together, let's measure that, right? And there's a lot of value, I think, to being kind of formulaic about culture. I think you can really do some good work with that. But what I've learned over time is that that's not enough, that a lot about culture is about the inspirational nature of culture, which is hard to measure, hard to put your finger on. And it has a lot to do with how I feel about what we're creating together and how I feel about these people around me and how I feel about being part of this thing. And so that emotion I've seen, and again, as when I was the chief people officer in a company, I started to really get clear about how important that is, because that is a big part of my experience of culture. It's the kind of in my heart, what is my feeling about my work, about my job. And so I started to see that the culture work absolutely has just as much importance as being, systematic and rigorous about studying culture and changing culture, is how do we talk about those pieces that are related to inspiring people to want to be part of it and to creating a place where people feel a connection and feel a sense of belonging. And so just I think in this work, I've realized how important it is for the human beings to be seen, to be valued, to feel like leaders see them and connect with them, to feel like there is regular communication and regular like humanness at work, that it's not just a set of values on a wall that we make sure we check the box on. And so this has been, again, my experience over time is just I have been part of the experience of having the heart piece be really activated. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to call this book The Power of Culture. Part of it was about the role of leadership and how important that is. But another part of it is the power when you have that hearts and minds approach. It is beautiful. It has such a motivating and energizing effect. And the cover of my book has a sunshine, and that's what it really reminds me of, is sunshine, that feeling of like, oh, I'm alive and this feels good and this feels positive. And so that's the, to me, that combination of hearts and minds.
And as you're talking about that emotion that people are experiencing, how are we feeling about our work together and all of the elements that go into that, that emotion drives everything. We're, yes. You know, that's just the reality of human existence, isn't it?
That's right. And I think the, your point, your question earlier, if for so long we were told to leave our emotions at the door, you know, don't, we don't bring emotions to work. And I think that that's very short-sighted. That's very, it's, that's not the way it works. We're human. We have these emotions. Instead, how do we talk about, how do we have our emotions be demonstrated at work? How do we talk about our emotions at work? Instead of just pretending like they don't exist, let's get better at how we use our emotions and talk about our emotions at work.
Yeah, that's a fantastic place for us to wrap up our discussion today. There's so much more we could get into. And if we had another hour, I would want to dive in more on some of the getting more deeper on the behaviors, getting deeper on accountability, getting deeper on some of those things. But listener, I'm going to encourage you, check out our guest today, Laura Hamill. The book is The Power of Culture. Again, you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. And Laura, it's been a delight talking culture with you. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so much fun, David.
Absolutely. So listener, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of these practical skills to help you accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. Again, I want to thank our guest, Laura Hamill, as well as our producer and sound engineer, Brooke Bradford at Sheep and Space Digital Business Services, and Laura at Brooke Marketing for their work on this episode. Until next time, listeners, be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
You know what they say, early bird gets the ultimate vacation home. Book early and save over $120 with Vrbo. Because early gets you closer to the action, whether it's waves lapping at the shore or snoozing in a hammock that overlooks, well, whatever you want it to. So you can all enjoy the payoff come summer with Vrbo's early booking deals. Rise and shine. Average savings $141. Select homes only.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.